Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Good evening, everybody. Thanks for your time. Just to introduce myself, I'm Subhash. I am the co-founder, managing director, and CEO of the company. To give you a little bit about my background, I've been in the telecom software industry, that's our area, for about 26 years, having founded another company called Subex way back in 92, ran the company for 20 years, started off with very humble origins, $500 of capital at that point in time in 92, definitely was not a fortune even in those days, grew the business to about $120 million in revenue. About 1,500 employees, about 300 telco customers across 80 countries, offices in 10 countries. So it was very, very satisfying journey. And in 2012, I sold and exited the business. And in 2013, I co-founded this business. We are still in the same space, telecom software. So I've got all my learnings of those 20 years. But we don't compete with my earlier company. It's in a completely different space. I mean, that used to be on the financial side of things, working with the CFO for solutions, and now it's on the marketing side. Nick?
Thanks, Subhash. I'm Nick. I'm the finance director. I'm an ex-investment banker, so please don't hold that against me. I qualified as an accountant with KPMG way back when and spent then the majority of my career with UBS and HSBC. I joined the Plateau team in the middle of 2017, to take them through the float and go forward with them. Very much believing in Subhash and his story, and it's been a great ride so far.
About the company, founded in 2013, and we did our IPO in December 2017, raising about £4.3 million. The business that we are in very simple terms here, is to help the telecom operators out there to understand their subscribers better, so that they can then serve them in such a manner that their revenue goes up and churn comes down. So it's a twin objective thing here. One is to increase the revenue of the telcos. The second one is to increase loyalty or reduce churn. So that's what we do. I'll tell you more about the solution as we move forward. We help the telcos to increase their revenue approximately to the extent of about 5% on an annual basis. So that's what we do. And given the fact that they would have already recognized all their costs, when the revenue increases, it pretty much flows straight through to the bottom line. So that's the really attractive part. H1 revenue was up quite significantly, 53%, to about $2.4 million. We have all our numbers in dollars. We report in dollars. Our EBITDA also was up quite nicely to about $1.747 million. And in this particular year, we did acquire certain business assets. We'll have more about that as we move forward. So what's the product? What do we do? We call it the Multi-Channel Marketing Hub. Essentially, it's about customer engagement. The telcos have to constantly engage with their subscribers in order to ensure that the subscribers keep using more and more of the products. They remember them. They don't walk away. I mean, because options are plenty, right? So they can go from one telco to another telco. That's churn. Or even if they have got this particular telco SIM card, they don't necessarily have to use it. They can use somebody else. That's called multi-simming, where you have got multiple connections. So telcos have to first and foremost understand the subscribers extremely well as to what are the subscribers doing, what products are they consuming, what are they not consuming, what do they download, what do they browse, do they download music or not. So mobile phone has become pretty much our lives, revolve around the mobile phones, right? So, and we try to do pretty much everything, particularly with the later generation. I mean, the current generation, I mean, the youngsters, they don't even use a laptop for most of these things. They just use a telephone. So telcos have the opportunity to understand a lot about them, but they have not been doing it. Let me give you an example. I mean, my provider, the telco, I have my connection from India. I've been living in India for a long time. They keep sending me a variety of offers for prepaid products today. I've been their customer for 24 years and a postpaid customer all along. I'm a contract customer. I've never, ever been a prepaid customer of this telco of mine who is supposed to be serving me for the past 24 years. And they still haven't figured out that I'm a postpaid customer and not a prepaid customer. Unfortunately, that's the state of affairs with the telcos. Now, that is an opportunity for us. We can help them change that, understand what's going on out there. And after having understood the customers, the next thing is to communicate with them. And then collect all that information, move forward and monetize the data that they have, and then consolidate all of that, report all of that, and then it continues. Palatro as an organization helps them to do all of that, to understand their subscribers, communicate with them, monetize the data that they have, leverage that information that they have, staying within the confines of GDPR and all of that. So don't worry about that. So doing all of that and then reporting on that and moving forward. So that's what we do. So how do we do that? We have proprietary technology. So we are in the space which is called big data analytics, because we are talking about very large volumes of data. I mean, big data, it's about variety, velocity, and all of that. I mean, as to volume, and those are the three V's. And some people talk about variety as well. So all these things are there. So we help them handle such humongous amounts of data. The largest customer that we have has about 90 million subscribers, out of which there are 60 million active subscribers. So the 60 million are using their phones every day for something or the other. And they generate about 50 billion transactions a day. It's large because everything, I mean, what they browse, when they browse, what they download, what they send by way of message, where do they speak, everything is tracked. And that's 50 billion transactions a day. So imagine handling that sort of volume. Naturally, that's why you need big data. And that's what we have. But they're just having plain vanilla big data for something like that will not help. We need to innovate on that. So Palatro has come up with a couple of innovations. In fact, a couple of them are, as we speak, in a patent pending phase. So you apply for patent, they give you an initial registration, then over a year you complete all their all the validation is completed, and then you have a patent. So we're going through that process now. And what we have done there essentially is, I mean, I'm not going to explain all of that. So we've got something called smart hypercube based data modeling. So we create a hypercube for each subscriber, representing each subscriber. Then the hypercube essentially has the behavior of that subscriber, which is rolled up on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. Because as a subscriber goes through, the behavior changes at times. You get more data, you can enhance the profile, all of that. Then the next thing is that the intelligent n-dimensional vector search. So what happens here is, so we're talking about large volumes of data and large number of subscribers. But the telcos have to act in a very quick manner. So there are trigger campaigns. So let's say there's a particular behavior they see with a subscriber somewhere, and then they immediately intervene with a message, with a product, with a campaign, with an offer, whatever. To do that, it is split-second decisioning and action. So it's not just enough to have all the data stored very nicely in all your in servers or in a storage and all that. One should also have the ability to track that, take it out, make sense of it, process that, present that, and act on it. And all of that has to happen within a matter of seconds. Because if somebody is browsing, let's say, Facebook now, if the telco has to understand as to what exactly this person is browsing, and then understand whether, for example, a great use case here. There are a lot of people who have data packages, but they don't have Facebook package or a LinkedIn package or something like that, where they've got special pricing for a particular URL, a particular browsing activity. So telco has to understand that, okay, Subhash is on Facebook right now. He's been on Facebook for the past 3 minutes. He has a data pack, but he does not have a Facebook pack from us. Here's an opportunity for us to cross-sell a Facebook data pack to him right now. There's no point understanding this or knowing about this 20 minutes from now. By then, Subhash would have moved on from Facebook. He's not even bothered about that at that point in time. So at that point in time, when they figure that out, they have to intervene, send a message to my phone saying that, hey, looks like you're browsing Facebook, but you don't seem to have a Facebook pack from us. It's a wonderful pack that we have. Here it is. Why don't you buy it? And people tend to buy. So this sort of intervention, we're talking about real time, absolutely real time intervention, can happen only if you have got an ability to store huge volumes of data, make sense of it, and retrieve that in very, very short order. So those are the kind of technologies. There are a variety of things here, but we don't have time to go through all of that. So I just touched upon a couple of points. So we have, as an organization, we have managed to wrap our heads around that technology, innovate, and then operationalize it. So what's the demand here? And I'm not talking about demand in dollar terms. What do the telcos really need? So to understand that, we need to understand what they're going through. The telco industry has got heavily commoditized at this point in time. Everybody views a telco as a dumb pipe. They provide the highway, somebody else drives on that. Like a Google or a Facebook or an Amazon or somebody else. And they kill the telcos. We talk about OTT, over the top. That's what's happening. The telco is providing something, standing there, somebody else is going over the top. And they eat the lunch and the dinner and whatever else off the telco. So we are here to try and change that for the telcos and help them actually monetize the data that they have. So telcos need somebody who can help them do that. They've got lots of data, they're drowning in it, but they don't know how to monetize that. So that's the need. The need is to dynamically profile the subscribers, understand them, and intervene, as I explained earlier. And this is exactly what Palatro provides, and hence the relevance of an organization like Palatro. We have brought, and they want this to be done differently from what, I mean, this space that we're talking about theoretically has been around for a long time. And there are players like IBM and SAS, Oracle. There are large players out there who have been providing these sort of services for a long time. But they've been doing that in a very archaic manner, let's put it that way. Or it's legacy, the way they've been doing it. It has to be done differently. It has to be engineered, architected, and delivered, operationalized differently. And that's what Palatro has done. So to give you a very fundamental difference between the way we do it and the way the competition does it, the traditional way has been, you've got the intelligence sitting in what's called as a business intelligence platform. Every telco has a business intelligence platform. So they've got the intelligence sitting there. Then you have got a workflow to actually take this intelligence and operationalize it. Now that's a different solution. So that's what most of these players offer. What we have done is we've married the two together. So we have said it doesn't make sense having your intelligence there and your operational stuff here. They have to be together. And it's only then can things become real time. Otherwise, it may be near real time, it may be yesterday, whatever, but it can never be real time. So this is what we have done. And we have made it extremely easy for the marketer to use. Now, traditionally, the way it has been is that the marketer never ever really uses the tool. The marketer in a telco will sit and think up a campaign or what they want to do. Then they transfer that to a set of software guys who will sit at the console, actually use a tool, and set up, configure a campaign or something like that, and then it runs. When we look at this, we see disintermediation, a serious level of disintermediation here. It is something like, I never drive, I just tell somebody this is how I want it to be driven, and then somebody else drives for me. But then I don't understand the strengths of the tool because I'm not using it. So I can't be innovative enough. We have changed that completely. We said that should not be the case. The customer is a marketer, and the marketer must be empowered to use a tool. So we have developed a piece of software which is extremely easy for anybody to use. And the marketers are not IT savvy. They are creative guys. So it should be extremely easy, wizard-driven and intuitive and all that. So our software is used by the marketers directly. So then they understand the power of the software and the possibilities therein. And when they understand that, they can be more creative and more result-oriented, and they'll get better results. To give you a typical example, when we replaced IBM's solution in Celcom Malaysia, they've been using IBM for 5 years, and they've been talking about, oh, that's a great product, fantastic, we're happy with it. Until we manage to get in front of them, which is not easy in the telco world because they're very bureaucratic, we managed to get in front of them and demonstrate our product. They said, oh, this is great, let's try it. And they changed it. In those days when they were using IBM, they used to have 10 software professionals from an outsourcing company sitting there and doing nothing but translating the ideas of, or configuring the campaigns, that means translating the ideas of a marketer onto the tool. It's a serious waste of money, huge disintermediation, and not innovative. Today, when they use our product, it's the marketers themselves who do it. So they've done away with this layer. Cost comes down straight away. But more importantly, the marketer is empowered today. So we have given them a solution which is dramatically different from what they have been used to all these years. And that is changing their understanding, their approach. All right, so that's the market opportunity here. So people ask me about what's the size of the market, how many millions, billions, whatever dollars. Now, the way we look at it, the product that we have, the entire philosophy behind the product, the architecture, the design, all of that is very different from what's been out there. And it's a great brownfield opportunity for us. It's not greenfield because every telco has something. Our job is to convince them that what they have is significantly inferior to what we have. That's our job. So when we go out there, every telco or any telco that does not have our solution is a potential opportunity for us. So it's a huge opportunity. We are targeting 362 telcos at this point in time in the medium term. That's not the whole universe. There are more, but in the telco world, you need to first graduate, then postgraduate, then doctorate. I mean, that's how it goes. You can't straight away go to an AT&T and sell a solution. It doesn't work that way. You have to first start with the smaller telcos. You start in the emerging markets. You start with the smaller telcos. Then you slowly go up, the level of maturity. That's how it is. So initially, we are looking at these telcos, and slowly, over the next 5 years, we look at the entire universe. And this is something that we did very successfully in my earlier company, Subex. That's how, in a span of 20 years, we got to 300 telco customers. So when I look at that number of 362 telcos being looked at, I'm not concerned. This is something that I've done before and successfully achieved over whatever number of years. So that's the plan here. So it's a huge opportunity, very, very large opportunity according to us. We're just nibbling at the edges at this point in time. There's a long way to go and we will go that way. So what have we achieved on the customer side? One of the biggest challenges in our space is to win customers because it's a very long sales cycle. It's like 8 to 10 months. Telcos are very bureaucratic. They are risk averse. They don't like to change. They believe in living in the prehistoric times. So that's the way they are. So despite all that, in the past 1 year, if you look at the progression, in 2015, we had one customer. In 2016, we had two, moved to six, and now 13. So you can see the momentum building because it's a highly networked world. When a few telcos already have it, then it's much easier to sell to more because word spreads, references, and we got stories, war stories to tell them, how we beat somebody else, how we replaced IBM, how we replaced SAS and all that. So we can talk about all those things. So it then, it's like the cumulative effect is quite significant. So that's what's happening here with regard to customer. And our target over the next 2 years is hopefully to get to about 45 to 50, 2 to 3 years. So that's a global footprint we have today. So we're quite well spread. We're very strong in Asia. We've got some customers in Africa, and we are now starting to move to Central and Eastern and Southern Europe. We will get to Fortress Europe a little later. I'll probably think about 12 to 18 months. We should be in Western Europe. We've got something in the Caribbean. We're starting to grow in Latin America and that LATAM and that sort of area.
Thanks, Subash. So how do we turn that into revenue? We have three key revenue models. The easiest one is the one in the middle, which is the license fee. Now, that's what I always call a one-off license, as in we sell license to the software and the customer can use it straight off the bat from there on in. But the key thing with that is that it usually generates further revenue in two main ways. Obviously, there's the maintenance income. That's 10 to 15% typically of the license fee. That's fine. We typically enter into 5-year contracts with customers, so they have maintenance income over that period. But more importantly, this is enterprise software, and in common with pretty well everyone who sells enterprise software, it will always generate the change request. And what that is you sell the customer the software, and as Sebastian said earlier on, the guys who use it are the marketing guys. They go away and play with it, and maybe after 6 months, they'll come back and say, we love this, it's fantastic, it's got features X, Y, and Z, but hey, can you make it do A, B, and C? And that's a change request. And usually the response to that is, yes, of course we can, and of course we charge them. It may be relatively small individual amounts, it might be $10,000, might be $30,000, but it builds up. And in one particular case, we've actually billed one customer more in change requests than we have actually, we billed them for the license in the first place. So that's great news. And what that does is it builds repeating revenue. And I stress, I don't call it recurring because people attach a certain meaning to the word recurring, but it's repeating. It's the maintenance income is clearly in the contract. The change requests aren't. They're not contractually absolutely guaranteed, but they always do it because they will always come back and say, hey, can we change this software, please? Yes, of course we can. And particularly, as I say, it's in the nature of marketing people. They're creatives. They come back. They want to change this. So that's the license fee. As I say, most of our customers are on that, and it builds repeating revenue going forward. On the left-hand side, less important to us now, so I won't spend a lot of time on it, but it's the gain share model. This is, as it says on the tin, we take a proportion of the gain that the telco generates by using our software. And what that is, the one customer there, it used to be two customers, one customer actually moved onto a license fee because they figured out they were paying us too much money, so that proves the software works. Typically, the smaller customers and BTC, Bahamas Telecom, is 250,000 subscribers. Compare that with Robi, which is a license fee, which is Sebastian's referencing them earlier on, they're 90 million. They would be paying us millions of dollars if they were on a gain share. So that's Bahamas Telecom, a very simple concept. It's great for the small guys. It de-risks it for them. If they don't make money, they don't pay us anyway. That's fine. We aspire on the right-hand side to move to a managed service model. This is where we both supply the software and we supply the team of people to run it. And in particular, Tele2, which is the contract we announced in April this year, that's a contract where we've sold them the software and we've got a team of guys working with them for a year in this case. It may extend, it may not, we don't know yet, to implement their market, effectively be their marketing team and set up the systems for them. So obviously that's great because that's a monthly fee. It's very high margin for us. And over time, we'd aspire to be moving to that model with more of our customers. In fact, Globe, which is also referenced there, that's a contract which came in with the assets we bought earlier this year in August, the Danatec acquisition, which we'll come on to shortly. So that's our revenue models. So if I flip forward to the numbers, as you can see, revenue and EBITDA for the half year growing very nicely, all in line with expectations. In fact, if you compare 2018 to 2017 in EBITDA terms, it's the 2018 numbers reflect both PLC costs, because we weren't floated in 2017, and also various sundries, like, for example, Sebastian and his brother weren't even paying themselves a salary in 2017. So you can see that if you adjust for those items, it's very healthy EBITDA growth, which demonstrates the margins that we generate on this business. What I really wanted to focus on here on this slide was the bottom left, which is the repeat revenue, which is the gain share, which we talked about, the change requests, and the maintenance. That's obviously something investors like, we like it too, because it's revenue you can not quite bank, can never say that, but it's great for in terms of knowing that at the start of any one year, you have got a certain amount of your costs effectively covered. Other than the maintenance, it's not contractually baked in, but we know it will come. So that's great. And that's obviously a very healthy growth in terms of percentage-wise. And over time, we'd like that to build to at least a third of the revenue of the business. And we see that in the medium term. So those are the financial highlights for the first half of this year. As I mentioned, we acquired back in September, it closed, certain assets of the Danatec Group, which were, as we didn't buy the business itself, we bought the assets, mainly the contracts. So we stepped into some contracts. Initial upfront consideration for that was $7 million. We did a placing to fund that and some working capital, £6 million. And what that did for us was both extend the geographic footprint, which Sebastian showed you earlier on, and it brought additional products as well. Particularly, it did have an existing campaign management product, which actually we don't think was as good as ours, and over time would be migrating their customers, or now our customers, onto our platform, and that will be reduced. But it brought also a loyalty management and a notification platform product, which enables us to go and talk to both existing customers about new products and also new potential customers about a broader suite of products. It doubled our underlying subscriber base, so that's, again, a big tick in the box for us when we talk to new customers. It makes us much more credible. And most importantly, I think, for us, it gave us access to Telenor, which is a very big telco. A global framework agreement with 11 operating companies under the Telenor umbrella, which lasts through to 2021, which gives us the ability to go in and talk to those new customers, in many cases, about our increased product suite. It also brought a strong recurring revenue, in particular the Globe contract, which I referenced early on, which is, again, very healthy for us. So that's the acquisition we made back in August. Current trading, this was dated from our interim results, but nothing has particularly changed. We did actually say in our announcement the other day that we had visibility over 3.3 million revenue for now for 2019. Just very briefly on that, given the sales cycle, we typically sell 8 to 10 months. We see sales happening in 8 to 10 months. So we have very good visibility at any one point over almost a year. So there gets a point in a financial year when we pretty well can see the revenue for the full year. And that's the FinCap forecast for the 2019 is $10.5 million. We did say at the time of the interims we could see 2.4 of that. We can now see 3.3. And that is building over time very well. So we're very, it definitely supports our expectations of growth in 2019. With that, I'll hand back to Subhash just to go through what we've done since IPO.
Just to give you a quick overview of what we have achieved in the current financial year, 2018. I personally believe that the company which came and did IPO about 11 months ago is significantly different from what it is today. We've done a lot of things in this year. One, we did deliver our 2017 results, whatever we committed, that's fine. And then our product base has expanded significantly. We were a single product company when we did IPO. Now we've got 7 products. We got a couple through acquisition and the rest were organically developed. So that changes the whole picture or into the color of the organization in the eyes of our customers. Along the way, we did this acquisition and we bettered that. We have completely integrated that and we have leveraged that. What we acquired brought us a global framework agreement with the Telenor Group for one of the products. After the acquisition, within a span of 2 months, we have managed to add a second product to the global framework agreement with Telenor. And our objective is to add a third one at some point in time. So when you have more products onto that, then your possibility to sell more to the Telenor Group naturally increases. The acquisition took us straight into Central and Eastern Europe. And subsequently, we have acquired a customer in Southern Europe. So whichever way you look at it, the number of the types of customers, the kind of contracts we have, the number of products that we have, all those things have significantly changed during 2018. So it's been a very very big year for us, lots of changes in very positive direction, and we doubled our customer base from 6 to 13, and I believe that we might even increase that before the year is out. So there has been significant change. Whatever we promised during IPO, we have delivered. And we've actually done more things than what we said we would do. And we hope to continue on that path going forward. So with that, I would like to sum up. I would like to, let me just tell you exactly what we do. Very simple. We help our telco customers to understand their subscribers so that they can increase their revenue and increase loyalty. It's very simple. This is our business. And how do we do that? We collect all the data that is there in the telco world. We churn, we process all of that. We understand that, we analyze that, and we help the telcos leverage that, monetize that data in a way that they have never, ever dreamt was possible. That's our business. We're very passionate about this. We believe there's great opportunity here. There's a long way to go, but it's a very clear path for us as to exactly what we need to do, and we intend to deliver on that. Thank you very much. Open to questions.
Could you talk a little bit about working capital? I mean, obviously you guys seem to do really well, but in the interim results, it seemed that a lot of profits were used up with working capital. Is that going to be the case going forward as we grow and get more customers?
Can I give the qualitative part? You can give the quantitative if you want. Okay. So I'll handle the qualitative part. He can handle the quantitative part. Why is that so? That's a question really as to why do we have high debtor days? I keep hearing about this all the time. So let me take the bull by the horns. This is no different from what we did in Civic. So let's understand what's happening here. We go to a telco, bureaucratic organization, and we are positioning a product there which is going to replace an IBM solution or an SAS solution or Oracle or something like that. Now, as we all know, nobody got fired for buying from IBM, right? That still continues. So if they have to switch from an IBM to a Pelatro, which is, you know, you can't even call it a minnow in front of an IBM, imagine the risk that they perceive. And they're not paid to take risk. They're paid to ensure that nothing goes wrong. That's what it is. So why should the executives, they love our product, that's fine. But why should they take that risk? They will take that risk only if they believe that it's fully mitigated. Okay, so what do we tell them? Okay, we believe it's a great product, you believe it's a great product, but you perceive a risk here. Take our product, use it, be happy, and then pay us. Now, we can afford to do that. I mean, that's pretty much the only way to get in for an organization like ours, because we're a small company. These are large telcos, right? Now, when we do that, and why can we do that? We can do that because of a couple of reasons. One, we are absolutely confident about the product. We know it will work. Point number two, we are betting on creditworthy telcos. We don't go and do this in Timbuktu, okay? We do this only with telcos who are not paying us today, not because they can't afford to pay, but because of this risk, the perception of the risk. So they, when things work, and there's a contract, it's not that we do it without a contract, there's a firm contract. So once the product works, they will do it, absolutely. And finally, we do have a margin which allows us to take this sort of steps. So I don't think we will ever have a cash flow issue. We have not had that. We will not have that. I do not think we will ever have a bad debt issue. In all these 3-4 years, we've not had a single dollar of bad debt, and we don't expect to have it. In Subex, we did exactly the same. This is a strategy, actually, of getting in. In Subex, we had 300 days of debtors initially. By the time I sold the business, several years hence, it had come down to 65 days. So our promise to the market, whatever the number is at this point in time, by 2020 December, it will be between 100 to 120 days. It will happen because our stature will improve, so the need for this sort of strategy will come down. The risk perception will come down. At some point, they will not even perceive any risk after we have done this a few times with large telcos. So that will change. So once that changes, this will change. So that's a qualitative part of it. Quantitative is a result of that.
Thanks. Haven't got a lot to add to that, but obviously there were some numbers in the results. In particular, there was $750,000 in round numbers outstanding at the end of 2017, which was related to one particular customer. It was slightly unfair because I think we signed the contract with them something like the 29th of June 2017, so it just came into the first half. But anyway, that's by the by. And clearly that was outstanding. Again, the majority of that was outstanding at the end of the first half of this year. I think they paid 400,000 round numbers back. And we will have collected all of that by the end of this year. There were a couple of other longer standing debts with a couple of other customers, but they were both $100,000+. So none of that is any concern. And just step back, as Subhash said, this is not just us. The telecoms industry generally has a culture of late payments. So we're both operating
for smaller players.
For smaller players, yeah. So we're operating in, that's the environment we operate in. And as Subhash says, it's a tactical. In terms of this year, I'm not going to stand up and give forecasts, but we were expecting this year, pre the acquisition, to be broadly cash positive. However, the acquisition we made, we stepped into contract assets. So we stepped into contracts. So we picked up the contracts, and obviously we picked up a bunch of guys running the contracts. And they obviously had a payroll. Payroll gets paid every month, but even though we pick up the entitlement to the contract in the same month, we're not going to get paid that until 60, 90 days, whatever it is. So that's an automatic working capital negative. So absent the acquisition, we'd have been cash neutral to slightly cash positive this year. The acquisition has put us back slightly, in a good way, for obvious reasons. You know, it's good business. But that's where we are. So that's how the business will evolve. But as Subhash says, going forward, A, we don't need to be quite so accommodating to new customers because we have far better credibility and we can afford to be more assertive in terms of our terms. And B, the profitability will cope with that anyway. So hopefully that answers your question.
Thank you. You mentioned that your bureaucratic, risk-averse customers, what you do for them is help them better understand their customers and that therefore their revenues grow. I felt that was a bit of a leap. From them understanding their customers to revenues growing. I wonder if you could just give me a kind of tangible example from a user's perspective of what it feels like to be a customer of a telco that is, let's say a mobile phone telco that is using your software versus one that's not? What's actually different, and therefore
for the subscriber,
the actual user, what's changing their behavior? What's different?
Right. So what happens in the telecom world? I mean, particularly in let's say in a prepaid environment, this happens in a different way in a postpaid environment. I'll explain both. So in a prepaid environment, is that they always have connections with multiple telcos. That's called multi-simming in this world. So you have two SIMs, three SIMs, something like that, from different telcos. And they're looking for deals from the different people to actually use it as to where they would top up or recharge and where they would use and so on and so forth. So the telco, which really starts understanding them better and starts offering deals to them and suggestions and promotions and all that, will get a higher mind share of the subscriber. So what is the subscriber experiencing? The subscriber is experiencing better understanding by the telco, who's then giving him or her offers which are more relevant and contextual for that individual. And when that happens, the person naturally uses, it's something like, I'll give you a very simple example, which I'm sure you'll understand. Amazon, you buy 10 books from Amazon, you get the 11th as a suggestion from them. Okay? Do you think you'll go to somebody else after that? You will keep going back to Amazon because you know that Amazon understands you better and will serve you better. This is what we are trying to do. So we are trying to make the subscribers understand that it is telco A who understands them better and is also serving. So naturally, the subscriber perceives better value in that relationship, and hence the higher consumption. So it's higher usage. The price cannot be increased because the price is only moving south. So it's about consumption, which has to be increased, usage, which is increased. That's what the subscriber will experience, leading to higher revenue. In a postpaid environment, it's more about, you don't have these freebies coming. It's about different plans. You're on a particular plan, you move to a different plan. You were on a 3G plan with a 4G phone. Now you move to a 4G plan, things like that. So it's more upselling in a contract or postpaid world. In the prepaid world, it's both upselling and cross-selling.
Yeah. It's also worth bearing in mind, to put it in context, that the sort of subscribers that our customers are dealing with are the guys who are paying $2 a month. So most people, I'm sure everyone in this room, is probably paying Vodafone or O2 30 quid a month. So it's a very different mindset. If they can get another 5 cents out of these guys, that's a lot of incremental revenue.
How large is your software development and data analytics team? Where is it based? And what do you do to help your customers comply with GDPR?
Okay, so the team size at this point in time is about 100 people of all the engineering talent, which includes data scientists, et cetera, They're based out of Bangalore in India and Nizhny in Russia. With regard to what we do on the GDPR side, well, GDPR essentially, we have made our product GDPR compliant. That means it's all about anonymizing the data, making sure people cannot understand whose data that is, et cetera. So right throughout, it's coded, as in people cannot understand, they don't see the real data. And then even when they see some data, it is not linked directly to a particular phone number. So if my phone number is given and my data is given, people can correlate and understand this is Subhash, it is his data. Instead, if my number is coded differently and it's a different identifier for that, then people won't be able to figure out. So it's all about, the entire data flow within our solution is in a manner where it is completely encrypted.
But you've still got to get consent for the sort of processing that you want to do, which is your whole raison d'etre.
The consent, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Now, that is the telco's job. See, we only provide the solution. They run that on their customers. They take the data. So we give them an opportunity. So the product has the ability for opt-ins and get consent and all that. So all that is built into our product. Okay, so when they run the campaigns, when they do that, they do all these opt-ins, KYC, know your customer surveys, and all that kind of stuff. So that's how we help them to do that.
I just wanted to challenge the competitive landscape a little bit, because it's what clearly one thing supplying Bahamas Telecom mm-hmm. and another thing supplying Vodafone. It's like Sunday League versus the Premiership, to be fair.
Yeah.
So are you telling me there's no marketing companies or software companies out there supplying a consumer-focused big data marketing solution for big telcos? I mean, there must be dozens of companies clambering at the bit to do what you're doing, surely.
Okay. No, that's not, I mean, Well, it may seem to be so, but that's not the reality. We come across about a dozen competition in all sorts of geographies. Okay, so it's the same players, be it Bahamas or UK or somewhere else. Okay, there may be certain differences in capabilities of these different players, but it's the same players. But what you said is right. It is completely different serving Bahamas Telecom as compared to serving Vodafone in UK or Vodacom in South Africa. I mean, all these are different, right? I mean, both may be Vodafone.
I'm talking about the sort of competence of the marketing effort.
Yeah, as to how you do it, what you do, right? So I understand. This is why I said when you start in the telecom world, you start with the smaller players, you slowly graduate from one level to next level. You can't straight away go and sell to a Vodafone UK for the simple reason. One, they will not trust you that you can do it. They will ask for references and things like that. And also the product maturity is something that happens over a period of time. But it is a fact that the players are still the same across, and there are significant changes that are happening. So because what's happening in the telecom industry? The telecom industry is now experiencing ARPU going down, right? That's absolutely the case. It's not going up, revenue per user. The number of subscribers is not growing anymore because they've reached saturation. How do they increase the revenue? The only way they can increase revenue is to mine the customers. That's the only way. But this was not the case earlier. And we did not have some of these technologies that we're talking about, like big data at that point in time, and the improvements on that. So the legacy solutions have been looking at this very differently.
Subhash, Nick, thank you very much indeed. Yeah. Much appreciated.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah. PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.